Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo. Hi, friends. I really sincerely hope that you're in good health, good spirits, good circumstance. The world is crazy these days, and it seems like the more we check in with the media, the more shocked we are. This is Mapo. Shakyamuni knew it. Nichiren knew it. You and I know it. Namo myoho renge kyo. Our work is set out for us. Now, we had begun the epilogue of the Lotus Sutra. No small task. As this sutra was being written down and later taught, you can see that this wrap-up, this bookend of the Lotus Sutra, like the prologue, which was an introduction to the entirety without a lot of specifics, this epilogue dives back into the rhetoric of the first teaching ever spoken by Shakyamuni, the Avatamsaka, right? And so as a result, or as a, I don't know if it's a result, but as an encompassing of those early words of Shakyamuni, much of the style of the parables and stories that he told when he first started trying to explain the experience of enlightenment, they appear in this epilogue. And that, if you're not familiar with these older teachings, especially the Avatamsaka, that might throw you a little bit. But please hang in there. I'll do my best to point it out. But it's not because it's that foreign to the Threefold Lotus Sutra. It's just that it explores a much greater scholarship of Buddhism than simply the Lotus, while at the same time, one has to recognize that the Lotus Sutra is the graduating cap, the pinnacle, the ultimate teaching that, like the ninth consciousness, it wraps around the entirety of the scholarship of what Shakyamuni was teaching from the get-go. It's just that his audience changed over time. But now, audience or no, the Lotus Sutra is him just saying, straight shot, do what I did. This is how I did it. This is how anybody does it. And well into the future, for you and I now, yes. So this is Buddha teaching Buddha, not Buddha teaching students of whatever it is he's attained. And lo and behold, in the first oration, the Avatamsaka Sutra, he was speaking in the way of being enlightened and had to stop it. He didn't teach it for very long. He didn't repeat that sermon, that insight, for very long. He noticed everyone was looking at him like a cockapoo looking at you going, huh? Right? They just didn't have reference to understand what he was talking about. So, but now we do. So when he starts talking about this magnificent elephant with the 7 feet and so many trunks and jewels and flowers, we know that it's a mental apparition, a mental exercise, an extending of our imagination. Number one, to break us free from the mundane world. And number two, to open up potential insight. So that's the way to read this, right? So let's get back into it. We're talking about the cup of the lotus flower, cup of Kimshuka gems with wonderful Brahma jewels, and the stamens are of diamond, right? This beautiful imaginary, just opulence, yes? So, moving on. A transformed Buddha is seen sitting on the petals of the lotus flower with a host of bodhisattvas sitting on the stamens of the lotus flower. From the eyebrows of the transformed Buddha, a ray is sent forth and enters the elephant's trunk. Now, I have an annotation. This transformed Buddha is yet another way of saying that the universal Tathagata, the universal Bodhisattva, the universal worthy, virtue, engine of life, is manifest in human form to communicate, to inspire, and to lead all the living to self-realization. So what do you think happens with this transformed Buddha? This light we've talked about is a shared insight. And so this ray, having the color of a red lotus flower, kind of like a laser pointer, yeah, emanates from the elephant's trunk, enters its eyes. The ray then emanates from the elephant's eyes and enters its ears. It then emanates from the ears and illuminates its head and changes into a golden cup. All right, so this is the process of purification of the skandhas, yeah? Or the six sense organs, because we include the mind in there. This ray, all right, on the head of the elephant, there are three transformed men. Where'd they come from? Just keep going. One holds a golden wheel, another a jewel, and yet another a diamond powder. These are all elements of teachings over the decades, yes? When he raises the pounder and points it at the elephant walks a few steps immediately. The elephant does not tread on the ground, but hovers in the air 7 feet above the earth. It has seven legs, 7 feet above the earth. Sorry, I lost my spot. Hey, hello, where are you? Okay. Yet the elephant leaves on the ground its footprints, which are altogether perfect. Of course, why would they not be? Marking the wheel's hub with 1,000 spokes. Okay, now it got a little abstract, right? From each mark of the wheel hub, there grows a great lotus flower on which a transformed elephant appears. This elephant also has 7 legs and walks after the great elephant. Every time the transformed elephant raises and brings down its legs, 7,000 elephants appear, all following the great elephant as its retinue. Okay, well, it's not going to take long before we don't even see the stars in the skies. We're just buried with elephants. But this is a mental exercise. On the elephant's trunk, having the color of a red lotus flower, there is a transformed Buddha who emits a ray from his eyebrows. This ray of light, as mentioned before, enters the elephant's trunk. The ray emits from the elephant's trunk and enters its eyes. The ray then... So this is just happening ad nauseum. Does this sound or seem like reverberation? Like resonance? Like we continuously repeat that the words, the insights... Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, when we penetrate the Gohonzon mind of our individual karmic momentum, when we open the Buddha eye, we are no longer restricted as this bodily self. We become cosmic self. We perceive all. So now do you see these elephants as just the accumulation of knowledge? The massive scale of participating in the engine of life. Oh my, this is really immense. This is the story here. This is the story of awakening. Yeah, that's what the Avatamsaka is. Moving on. Gradually rising to the elephant's back, the ray is transformed into a golden saddle, which is adorned with the precious 7 jewels. Again, with those 7 jewels. I'm telling you, and if you need reference, look in the appendix, I think it's appendix B, where I equate these 7 jewels with what they're named versus what Nichiren talks about all the time. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, 7. Not 6, not abbreviated, not, you know, forget those fools. Just look at what Nichiren wrote. Look at what Shakyamuni wrote. It's very clear. On the four sides of the saddle are the pillars of the precious seven jewels, there they are again, which are decorated with precious things, forming a jewel pedestal. On this pedestal there is a lotus flower stamen bearing the precious seven jewels. And that statement is also composed of 100 jewels. The cup of that lotus flower is made of a great jewel, which, if you've been following the stories, the great jewel is the enlightenment of the Tathagata, the Buddha Shakyamuni's enlightenment, the story of the great leader with the jewel in the top knot of his head, offers all of his soldiers after great battle all sorts of wonderful things, but never the jewel, right? You remember that story? It wasn't that long ago. We read it in the Lotus. On the cup, there is a bodhisattva called Universal Virtue. Boom. Who sits cross-legged, his body pure as a white jewel, radiates 50 rays of 50 different colors, forming a brightness around his head. From the pores of his body, he emits rays of light, and innumerable transformed Buddhas are at the ends of the rays, accompanied by the transformed bodhisattvas as their retinue. Wow, what incredible imagery. Let me offer you a slight interpretation of this. See if you don't see it. I've repeated this many times. We radiate our own life condition, right? And as we do so, and we elevate our life condition, become more and more trained in Buddha-ness, Tathagata-ness, staying single-minded about our Buddha awareness, living and moving in the momentum of the engine of life as it's occurring, which obviously includes our environment. You've heard me say this before. What we communicate to, let's use a different word from communicate, because that just sounds like talking, right? But we communicate with our energy, with our very being. We influence our environment. Yes, other people, but plants and animals and everything, the air around us. And what we are influencing is the Buddha of those living things, or non-living, but that's a whole other discussion. The point is, when we elevate our life condition, our communication isn't to Edna, the old lady who's gardening. When we elevate our life condition, our communication, our resonance, our radiation is to Edna's Buddha. Right? We encounter endless Buddhas. So, On the pedestal, there is a lotus flower stamen bearing the precious seven jewels, mandala. And the stamen is also composed of 100 jewels. The cup of the lotus flower is made of a great jewel, enlightenment. On the cup, there's a bodhisattva called Universal Virtue, which we've already discussed is the engine of life, the Tathagata, just in a different form. But the same thing. Hang on. His body, pure as a white jewel, radiates 50 rays. Remember to the 50th person? Remember that analogy Shakyamuni gave us? If you tell somebody and they take joy and single-mindedly embrace Namo Myoho Renge-kyo, and they tell somebody else about it, and that person tells somebody else about it, and so on, to the 50th person, that 50th person, not knowing who you are or the person you talk to, with that little information of just knowing Namo Myoho Renge-kyo, stands to experience enlightenment, Buddha-ness, more powerfully than even your radiation of enlightenment to your student or your friend or your... because they don't even have the connection with you. Just how powerful this There's no diminishment, in other words. So here we are with 50 again, 50 rays of 50 different colors forming a brightness around his head. From the pores of his body, he emits rays of light, radiates. And innumerable transformed Buddhas are at the ends of the rays. What did I say a transformed Buddha was? A manifestation, an instantiation of the engine of life. Yes, of course. Accompanied by transformed bodhisattvas as their retinue. When your life condition goes up, you attract support for it and detract things that would take you away. Right? Your mom would tell you, well, your bad friends will be pushed away when you conduct yourself in a way that demands that you have better friends. As you accrue better friends, the not-so-good friends just, they're not attracted to being around you anymore. They are, in fact, repelled. We witness this as children or as young adults or, if we're late bloomers, as adults. Eventually in life, you're going to see this and you're going to make choices based on it. So the rhetoric is no accident. It's the way we think. The elephant walks quietly and slowly and goes before the practitioner of the great vehicle, raining large jewel lotus flowers. When this elephant opens its mouth, the precious daughters dwelling in the bathing pools on the elephant's tusks play music whose sound is pervasive and extols the way of the one reality of the great vehicle. Could this be singing? Because that's what chanting means. It's a Latin root word, chante, chant, that literally translates as singing. Having seen this wonder, the practitioner rejoices and reveres again. Further reads and recites the profound sutras, salutes universally the innumerable Buddhas in all directions, makes reverence to the stupa of the Buddha of abundant treasures, and Shakyamuni Buddha, and salutes universal virtue and all other great bodhisattvas. Then the practitioner makes this vow. Okay. Had I received some merits through my former destinies, I could surely see universal virtue, be pleased, honored universal fortune to show me your form and body. See, now it's just going freely using the language. Virtue, worthy, fortune, all of these merits, they're all inherent. They simply require perception. Having thus made his vow, the practitioner must salute the Buddhas in all directions 6 times, day and night, and must practice the law. And that's not supposed to say remorse, it's supposed to say reflection. I did all of this editing yesterday, and it's as though I lost it all somehow. Did I not do a save? Did we lose power? It's a lot of work. You know what I'm talking about, right? Let's just see how many I'll catch here. Didn't find it. How did I misspell it? Maybe I got the last straggler. That would be good. Okay, let's just close that. He must read the Great Vehicle Sutras and recite them. And you know, it's adopting again the rhetoric of the Great Vehicle, which we first encountered in the prologue. Interesting now, in the epilogue, that it doesn't simply call it the Threefold Lotus. Or for that matter, the One Great Vehicle. But you can recognize it as the same rhetoric as the prologue. So it's almost like the bookends were written, and then Kumarajiva went about collecting the various sutras from China and the Gandhara region and so on and so forth in different languages, and put together what seemed to fit as the 28. He even has a version that has only 27 chapters, yeah? And not all of the same 27. H. Kern's translation is based on the 27-chapter Kumarajiva translation. It's interesting, isn't it? The history of these documents. But I think overall, as we read the whole thing, you can get a very solid idea of the program here, the methodology, yes? And thank goodness for our wonderful Bodhisattva Nichiren for putting this together in a concise doctrine that's super easy to practice and yet rests on a magnificently profound pyramid of scholarship, yeah? And we're very fortunate to be alive in this era, albeit with so much disgusting violence and perturbances in the world, perhaps all the more to help us focus on what we know is potentially possible, yes? Where are we time-wise? Okay, plenty of time. If I could just stay focused, yeah? He must read the great vehicle, the great one vehicle, the Buddha vehicle sutras, and recite them. It does say them, right? Think of the meaning of the great vehicle and reflect over its practice. Revere and serve those who keep it. See all people as if they were thinking of the Buddha. There it is again. And treat living beings as if they were thinking of his father and mother. Filial responsibility, right? The lineage of truth. When he finishes reflecting thus, the Bodhisattva universal virtue will at once send forth a ray of light from the white hair circle, the sign of a great man, between his eyebrows. When this ray is displayed, the body of the Bodhisattva universal virtue will be dignified as a mountain of deep gold, so well ordered and refined that it possesses all the 32 signs. From the pores of his body, he will emit great rays of light, which will illuminate the great elephant and turn it to the color of gold. All transformed elephants will also be colored gold, and all transformed bodhisattvas will be colored gold. When these rays of light shine on the innumerable worlds in the eastern quarter, they will turn them all to the color of gold. So, too, will be it in the southern, western, and northern quarters, in the four immediate directions, in the zenith and the nadir. Then in each quarter of all directions there is a bodhisattva who, mounting the six-tusked white elephant, king, is exactly equal to universal virtue. There's the transformation itself. The great elephant, boundless, limitless manifestation of merit, transformed into your Bodhisattva life, an instantiation of, a manifestation of Tathagatanas. Like this, by the transcendent powers, the Bodhisattva universal virtue will enable all the keepers of the great vehicle sutras to see transformed elephants filling the infinite and boundless worlds in all directions. At this time, the practitioner will rejoice in body and mind, seeing all the bodhisattvas, and will salute them and speaking to them, saying, great merciful and great compassionate ones, out of compassion for me, be pleased to explain the law to me. This is an interesting device, because obviously, as somebody who's awakened enlightenment, to ask others to explain the law back is to help people self-teach. Something I'm constantly talking about, right? That teaching is a strange word because it implies an authoritarian relationship. I know you don't. He knows I don't. The master-disciple kind of thing. but in an authoritarian setting. Whereas in Buddhism, what we're designed to do as bodhisattvas is to bring forth the teacher in others so that you, she, they can for themselves unlock insights to propel them into their path of enlightenment, the way. Makes sense, right? When he speaks thus, all the bodhisattvas and others with one voice will each explain the pure law of the Great Vehicle Sutras and will praise him in various verses. This is called the first stage of mind, in which the practitioner first meditates on the bodhisattva universal virtue. Annotation. After this long and colorful mental exercise, reminiscent of the Avatamsaka Sutra's constant hyperbole, we reach a point that echoes our experiences of first opening the eyes to our Nichiren Mandala with Daimoku, followed by Gongyo. Interesting thought to interject here. That everything we've just read could be a synopsis of when you first receive your correct mandala, your Nichiren copy of a Nichiren inscribed mandala, not Bob's or Frank's or Edna's, or I don't know why Edna's coming up today, but but a Nichiren inscribed mandala, and you bring it home and you have your altar set up and your butsudans open and you're about to enshrine. Maybe you mounted your new mandala on a board. You've surrounded it with some nondescript, but you know, like I did with this handmade gold paper, gold leaf paper, something to anything that doesn't detract from, but helps you focus on the mandala's inscriptions, or just it alone on a board, and you enshrine it. And you light incense, you light candles, you water your plants or plant them or whatever. And then you sit down, you chant for half an hour, really engaging with your new mirror, your personal portal to Guanzan mind. And then you recite Gongyo. You're opening your Buddha eye for the first time with this tool. It's a lot like the story we just read. And so this is what this little annotation is reminding you of, is this the process of connection. Continuing. Thereupon, when the practitioner... Why didn't I catch that last time? The practitioner, having beheld this matter, keeps the great vehicle in mind without forsaking it day and night. Even while sleeping, he is able to see universal virtue teach the law to him in a dream. Isn't that how dreams work? Right? They rehash the important things of the day, flush them out, and then stuff that's not important gets rid of, right? I remember even my mom when I was a kid, when I would complain, I can't remember, and my mom would just say into the air, it couldn't have been important then, right? You ever heard that? Exactly as if the practitioner were awake, the bodhisattva will console and pacify the practitioner's mind, speaking thus, in the sutras you've recited and kept, you have forgotten this word, or you've lost this verse. Then, this is driving me mad. 38 times I missed it. Then the practitioner, hearing universal virtue teach the profound law, will comprehend its meaning and keep it in his memory without forgetting it. How encouraging. This is part of the training, right? This is why we chant and do gongyo in the evening, so that we prepare for a night of just our mind doing the work. And then in the morning, we do it again to appreciate what we've learned, and we get a lot of insights in the morning because of it, which in combination, the learning from overnight and the instantiation in the morning, prepares us for our day. As he does this day by day, his mind will gradually acquire spiritual profit. The Bodhisattva universal virtue will cause the practitioner to remember the Buddhas in all direction. According to the teaching of universal virtue, the practitioner will rightly think and remember everything, and with his spiritual eyes, he will gradually see the eastward Buddhas, whose bodies are gold-colored and very wonderful in their majesty. It becomes an expectation, yes? Having seen one Buddha, he will again see another Buddha. In this manner, he will gradually see all Buddhas everywhere in the Eastern Quarter, and because of his profitable reflection, he will universally see all the Buddhas in all directions. Which is, we're right back at what we were talking before about comportment. Once again, annotation, but in a different form, we are reminded that it is our constant mindfulness and practice that we experience all others as potential Buddha. Continuing, having seen the Buddhas, he conceives joy in his heart and utters these words, or some such, right? By means of the great vehicle, I have been able to see great leaders. By means of their powers, I have also been able to see the Buddhas. Though I have seen these Buddhas, I have yet failed to make them plain, in other words, evident. Closing my eyes, I see the Buddhas, but when I open them, my eyes, I lose sight of them. Yeah, that's the Hasaha world and the tenacity of samsara distracting you, pulling you aside, yeah? I'm going to change that to evident. That's a better word. After speaking thus, the practitioner should universally make reverence, prostrating himself down to the ground toward the Buddhas in all directions. Having made reverence to them, he should kneel with folded hands and should speak thus. The Buddhas, the world-honored ones, possess the 10 powers, the fearlessness, the 18 unique characteristics, the great mercy, don't like mercy, well, the great compassion, and the 3 kinds of stability in contemplation. These Buddhas, forever remaining in this world, have the finest appearance of all forms. By what errors or delusions do I fail to see these Buddhas? Having spoken thus, the practitioner should again practice further contemplation. When he has achieved the purity of his contemplation, the Bodhisattva universal virtue will again appear before him and will not leave his side in his walking, standing, sitting and lying, and even in his dreams, will ceaselessly teach the law to him. After awakening from his dreams, this person will take delight in the law. So this is a progression of practice, isn't it? And remember, the title of this epilogue is A Meditation on Universal Virtue. What does this terminology, this personification of universal virtue, universal worthy, how do we experience it in our practice, in our daily life? So that's what's happening here, yeah? All right, we've covered a lot of ground. Why don't we leave it here for today within this manner? I'm just going to bold that so I know where we are. And we'll start this up again in the next video. This, I grant you, this epilogue, this final sutra on the third of the threefold lotus is densely packed, not only with ideas of what has been said already, but with really dense stories, imaginary, thought-provoking exercises, yes? So I'm taking a little more time. I've got more annotations in here to keep this from going astray into la-la land, yeah? Keeping us focused on the Lotus teaching. So I hope that you're gaining insights from this. I hope this helps you figure out how to see the clues for the meaning in the rhetoric of these translations, albeit, again, you know, translated from translations, from translations, from translations. Yeah, being aware that we're always single-mindedly seeking Buddha in here and not being drafted away into, you know, go-go gadget mind. Some of you will get that. Maybe all of you. Thank you so much for being here, for your practice. And in that, please continue to support, whether it's liking and subscribing, buying ebooks, buying mandalas, or just donations through Patreon and PayPal. You guys are invaluable. I have so much respect for you and your practice. It took me a very long time, decades, to come to some clarity. And I continue to get clarifications as I talk to you and share with you my insights. Right? I don't know how many Lotus Sutra translations I've read so far, but every one seems to bring something else to light. So thank you for that opportunity. Yeah. Links in the description, as always. Take care of your health. Please do that. If for no other reason than to keep your practice strong, right? And that should be the reason. But, Namo Myōren Gekyo. I will see you in the next one. Okay? Bye for now.